charismatic, controversial, a role model, an inspiration to millions of people across the world. Muhammad Ali, known simply as the Greatest, died over the weekend. His body arrived in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky this morning, where his funeral will take place later this week. Let's have a listen together to some of his most memorable words.
This is Sam Cooke. As you can see, like me, he's awful pretty.
I shook up the world! I shook up the world! I shook up the world!
Well, I was dancing.
A lot of people may think this is an act or show, but it's not.
He learned to talk before he was 1 year old, and he's always been a great talker.
I want the world to know I'm so great until Sonny Liston was not even a match. And I'm the greatest thing that ever lived.
Trainer looked at him at the beginning of the seventh round, and he said, get up, Sonny, get up, fight, fight, get up, Sonny. Sonny said, I'm no fool, I'm staying on the stool.
He will be in a bad fix because I will knock him out in round six.
Working on a record called The Gang's All Here.
Would you like to give us a preview of this disc?
Is New York with me? Yeah! Is Chicago with me? Yeah! Is London with me? Yeah!
Or if he starts talking jive, I'll get him in five.
Well, number one, he's too ugly to be the world heavyweight champion. Joe Frazier is so ugly, his face should be donated to the Bureau of Wildlife.
If he makes me sore, he'll fall in four.
He can't write no poems. He can't predict no rounds. And let me tell you, I'm not conceited. I'm just convinced.
If he keep talking about me, I'll get him in three.
Why? Why the mummy?
Because he fights. When he's fighting, if you ever watch him in the ring, he drags like that after his opponent.
If that don't do, I'll get him in two.
And how's a mummy gonna catch me? If you think I whoop Sonny Liston, you wait till I get George Foreman. He talks too much, he's ugly, I'm the true champion, and they make me the underdog. I'm gonna show them all they're wrong, because I'm the champion. I'm the real champion. There'll never be one like me.
If he run, I'll get him in one.
This is my last fight. I don't want none of you to miss it. So please, come to the theaters. I'm going to eat some raw meat, and I'm going to train. I'm gonna get ready and chop some old trees.
If he don't want to fight, he should stay home that night.
Only you know just how much I've lost. Oh, yeah. You know.
I'd like to say that you're not as dumb as you look, Harry.
The night they kept on playing.
You saw the Williams fight, you saw me reveal the Ali Shuffle. That's my new dance to the world.
See, look aside. Then this is Ali Shuffle from the front view.
Tennessee Walls.
How you like that?
I like that very much.
The girls tell me I'm too pretty to be a fighter. I'm going to have to go into the carding business.
Well, the commentator Jim Neely, who met Muhammad Ali a number of times, is with us this morning. My goodness, Jim, good morning. When you listen to that, nobody even close to being like him.
Absolutely. He was absolutely right on two counts. He was the greatest, and unfortunately he was wrong when he said he was going to retire after the George Foreman fight. He didn't retire when he should have, or at least should have retired after the following fight, which is the third and ferocious contest with Joe Frazier. And from then on, there were early signs of the awful disease that actually ravaged him and took him away from us at the age of 74. He should have been bright and sunny and been entertaining us for the last 30 years, as he did for the previous 40.
Obviously, Jim, he was a showman. So in that context, did he believe himself he was the greatest, or was that just part of the performance?
Well, he would admit that he took a lot of the persona from the greatest by a wrestler or a wrestler, as he called him, called Gorgeous George, who was a white man who had a wavy Jerry Lee Lewis style, almost crimped hair, and he told everybody that he was the greatest. And Ali thought this is a very good idea, and he adopted that persona and he took it to completely different levels. I remember a friend of mine went back to his hotel with Ali in his car just after the weigh-in for the Sonny Liston fight, and his heart rate was through the roof. He was screaming and shouting at Liston and causing all sorts of stuff and behaving like a complete lunatic. And my friend said to him, why did you do that? He said, Sonny Liston, he said, is the scariest man on the planet, and he's not afraid of any man, he said, but he's never met a lunatic before. And Liston simply couldn't work him out. Liston had no answer to him, and as it turned out, he had no answer to him in the ring.
And of course, I don't know, are we talking here about one of the most famous men in the world?
I would say he was, for a long time, the most recognisable and probably the most famous person on the planet. He superseded kings and presidents and, dare I say it, even popes, film stars, pop stars. Muhammad Ali was known all over the world, and he transcended everything. He was quite fortunate in that I can remember sitting up as a very small boy watching him win the light heavyweight gold in the Rome Olympics way back in 1960, when dear Eamon Andrews, who preceded Harry Carpenter, was actually doing the commentary. And Eamon said, we are going to see a lot more of this young man, Cassius Clay. And that indeed was the case. And of course, once he turned pro, the whole satellite explosion had started to take place, and we could get pictures from the other side of the world instantly. Whereas, Stephen, if you wanted to watch the heavyweight championship of the world, you had to go to the cinema and watch it on Pathé News or Movie Tone, and you got 2 or 3 minutes with a very plummy voiceover. But then you got this whole thing live, and dear Harry, who's no longer with us either, started doing all those great fights, and he had such a wonderful run, and he and Ali became the very best of friends.
Yeah, I was presenting some shows on Five Live on Ali last night, and we were playing quite a lot of the Michael Parkinson interviews. And of course, Muhammad Ali and Michael Parkinson's interviews went down into folklore, the relationship they had.
Well, totally, and he suddenly, you know, the smile, the handsome, benign face suddenly changed, and he looked threatening, and he sat upright in his chair, and he almost threatened Michael Parkinson. And you can see dear Parky sort of backing off, and then Ali smiled as if he was only kidding. But the side was the fourth one, there were very, very obvious signs of this Parkinson's that was to claim his life all too soon, and that to me was the sad bit. I think everybody, Stephen, was very sad when he departed, but everybody was very sad in the knowledge that the boxing and the blows to the head that he took, what he shouldn't have taken, probably brought the onset of Parkinson's on. Lots of people get Parkinson's who've never even watched boxing, never mind been in a ring, but it was so sad.
And that's part of the irony, I guess, the tragedy within this story, Jim, that the man that was known for boxing, that promoted it so well and so much, it killed him.
It did. I was privileged to have been at, I think, I can't remember which Olympics it was that I did, but it was 1996 in Atlanta, 20 years ago this summer, and I was in the stadium for the opening ceremony, and none of us knew, nobody knew, well, obviously one or two people did know, who was actually going to light the torch. And when Ali appeared, everybody thought, well, that's absolutely the right choice, but everybody was hoping and praying and keeping fingers and toes crossed that this ravaged, shaky, wobbly body would actually get to the torch and light the torch, and he did get to it. And there was as much a sense of relief as there was a sense of pride, because nobody, there couldn't have been anybody more fitting to actually do that. But whether he was going to do it or not, nobody was convinced, but he did do it, fortunately.
How did you get a chance to meet him, Jim?
I met him in the 1984 Olympics. He came through to some of the boxing. It was my first Olympics. I then met him at the World Championships in Houston in 1999. He came along to watch the boxing as well. And then I went to a post-opening ceremony reception in Atlanta when he wasn't in great shape. And the last time I saw him, like a lot of people, was at the Sports Personality of the Year in 2000, when dear little Harry presented him with the Sports Personality of the Century. And, you know, the interesting thing about that night was that the whole Manchester United team were there. They got the Team of the Year award, if I'm not mistaken, and Alex Ferguson was trying to get them all on the coach back to Manchester, because they had a a football match the following night, the Monday night, and they refused to go, and they all queued up. Steve, it was hilarious. David Beckham was orchestrating the thing. They queued up like little schoolboys with their bits of paper and wouldn't get on the coach despite Fergie's protestations until they'd got, every single one of them got a bit of a scribble from Muhammad Ali. That's just a measure of the man. They were like honestly, they were like wee boys at a sweetie shop.
Tim, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much, sir.
You too.
Thank you. Morning to you. Let's hear a selection of interviews from Muhammad Ali's formative days as Cassius Clay to his last interview with the BBC World Service in 2002. But this is a story that begins in Louisville.
Then I moved to places like Houston, Texas. Then I moved to Miami. Then I moved to Philadelphia and Chicago. But I still don't get the feeling of serenity and peace and satisfaction as I do here in Louisville, because this is home, and we all know how we like home.
I went to this big gymnasium hall where they were having what we call the home show, where people demonstrate exhibits, a bazaar like. And I went there, you know, kids looking for everything free you could get, popcorn and candy, and left my bicycle outside. It was a rainy night, I remember, and came back, it was stolen, so I asked the man where could I find the nearest policeman. He told me a fellow by the name of Joe Martin, who's downstairs in Columbia Training Center. So I went down and reported my bicycle, and I asked him could I learn how to box so I could beat the guy up if I catch him.
So he came downstairs where the gymnasium was and saw the gym, and he was all hostile, wanted to whip somebody, and so I said, you never fight if you don't know how. I said, have anybody ever taught you how to fight? And he said, no. And I said, well, you should come down here and learn how to fight first before you start picking fights.
In 1960, the world is only just beginning to know the name of Cassius Clay. In Rome, the Olympic Games are taking place. Cassius Clay is 18. He's America's light heavyweight. No one outside the States has ever heard of him. Clay's rival for the gold medal is the most famous amateur light heavyweight of all, the great Pole, Pierre Tchaikovsky. Clay is too fast and too clever for him. For the first time, the world sits up and takes note of Cassius Clay.
I am the greatest. Mr. Liston is an old man. He has no business being in the same ring with me. I'd like to help that poor old man. I want to give him lessons. Boxing lessons. Talking lessons. But since he's gonna fight me, what he needs most is falling lessons.
Mr. Muhammad Ali has just refused to be inducted into the United States Armed Forces. Notification of his refusal is being made to the United States Attorney.
The real enemies of my people are right here, not in Vietnam. And we who follow the most honorable Elijah Muhammad take no parts in wars. As the Holy Quran teaches us, we take parts in no wars on the side of infidels or Christians or non-believers in Islam.
Two black Americans face to face on the black man's continent, fighting for the richest prize in the history of all sports.
I beat him up second, third round, fifth round. Then about the seventh round, I hit him so hard in the side, maybe it was the sixth round, and he fell over on me, and I thought he was going to fall, and he whispered in my ear, "Did all you got, George?"
In fact, the referee, Zach Clayton, said to him, "Ali, stop talking." And imagine trying to stop Ali talking.
It's the most amazing fight I've ever seen.
And in the eighth round, Ali hit him with 11 straight punches, and Foreman went down.
Oh, he's got him with a right hand. He's got him. Oh, you can't believe it. And he's doing his shuffle. And I don't think Foreman's going to get up.
This is not me. I'm not bragging. I'm boasting. But they say I'm the most famous man in the whole world.
So we're still waiting for somebody who will overtake the greatest of all time.
Impossible. Nobody will ever be as great as the greatest of all time. But they can try.
Muhammad Ali, William and Armagh. Good morning.
Hello, Stephen. Your montages are very good. But I also think this, I just haven't highlighted enough. What I think for me, Muhammad Ali, a special human being, was when he, in the 60s and early 70s, when he was at the top of his career, was willing to give it all up and to fight for the human rights for individuals throughout the world, for the black man, for the civil rights.
Well, he refused to go to war as well, didn't he? He refused to go, and he lost his belt over that.
No, but his famous comment was, why would a black Negro from America go and bomb a brown man in Vietnam? He says he didn't even know, and he had no issues against. That was his reasons for doing it. And it was in the throes of the civil rights, Martin Luther King, and also probably give lead to other oppressed people throughout the world. So he's a great boxer, but he also was a man that was willing, and he's very few, willing to sacrifice all that in order to progress the rights for the underdog in the world.
William, thank you. Dick, morning, Dick.
Good morning. I rang up to tell you that Muhammad Ali fought in Ireland in 1972. He fought in Croke Park in front of 30,000, 40,000 people. And anybody who knows, he fought an American called Al Blue Lewis, whom he beat him. I think he beat him in the 11th round or something like that there. But he also on that bill that night, it was a great bill that night. The people wanted to fight on it, Joe Conte, Joe Bugner, and there was a famous little boxer from Belfast, was either Hugh Russell or Paddy McGuire, I'm not sure which of the two of them it was, fought on the same bill.
And what are your thoughts today, Dick, now that you've heard this sad news over the weekend?
Ah, God, it was, you know, he was something special. He really was, like, whenever he walked out and walked onto the ring, like, he was up. He was just miles in front of everybody. It was so sad to see him, his demise of the man, you know, like, it was just hard to watch it, you know, after what you knew what
from,
he was.
From someone
know?
Who was known to be so fit, so healthy, so attractive.
Exactly.
And what old age, I guess, and illness does to you.
That's the way life goes, unfortunately. But sure. It's just a memory that stuck with me and I'll never forget it.
Dick, thanks for calling us this morning. Thank you, sir.